Welcome, everyone, to the ProWrestling.net All Access Podcast. My name is Chris Short. Joining me, as always, is Jake Barnett, and we are here for your WWE SmackDown audio review. Jake and I get together every Saturday and do this review for you All Access, which means all of our readers can listen to it. We produce a ton of audio on the site each week. It is exclusive to our members, and we've got a bunch of stuff still sitting out there from WrestleMania weekend. Jason was very active with various interviews, including Seth Mates, former WWE creative member, joining Jason and I Sunday night for a complete review of the WWE WrestleMania show. He also had interviews with Les Thatcher over the weekend. Let's see, who else was there? Jake, who else was on the thing? I had the list right here, but I've apparently moved it now.
Well, we had quite a few members' audios that were brand new, but you had, Seth Mates, Court Bauer, Les Thatcher. Quite a few interviews, plus Jeff Lutz made his audio debut with Will and I for the WrestleMania preview, and we also had a free audio review of the show, and you had your review with Deathmates, obviously. There was a ton of extra audio just for WrestleMania, as well as free audio for non-members as well. But, yeah, we had a big week last week, and it was a lot of fun to kind of dig in. It was fun to record audio with Jeff, who was brand new to it, and it was nice to get for Jason to give everybody an opportunity to get their thoughts out on the show. It was a big weekend.
I found my list now. Thank you, Jake. You're right. We had Brian French from Between the Ropes join Jason to talk about the WWE Hall of Fame ceremony. Former ECW champion Justin Credible also stepped in to talk with Jason about WrestleMania and different things going on. And again, Jake mentioned the audio debut of our newest blogger, Jeff Lutz, who joined them as a preview to WrestleMania. And then Ryan Kester joined Will and Jake as well for that was an all-access review of WrestleMania, so you guys should have access to that. And then, of course, Jason added his Monday Night Raw review this week, which certainly had a lot to say about that crazy crowd that was there Monday night. And Will and Jake, again, did the .NET countdown this week. And, of course, Thursday, Jason and I did the .NET weekly audio show. We call it our flagship show. We reviewed all the news of the week, looked back on WrestleMania, talked about the future for WWE, spent significant time talking about NXT and how it's going to expand, the new building that they're about to move into, or about might be an unfair term. You're dealing with contractors, and as Jason said, anytime you're dealing with contractors, you never know what you're going to get. But they are actively working to that. They're going to be adding wrestlers soon. Jake and I were talking about that before we recorded, so a lot of stuff in .NET Weekly this week. If you want to get access to that, plus you'll get access to the ad-free version of the site, the .NET member forum, and the .NET member blog section, just head on over to ProWrestling.net, sign up right now to be a .NET member. Only $7.50 a month when you take the monthly option, and we have discounts at the six-month and annual levels as well. We'll knock a full $2 off each month when you take the annual option. So go right now, sign up to be a .NET member, listen to all that audio that was just done from WrestleMania and all the audio we'll be doing going forward. But going forward is where we are, Jake. This is the SmackDown review for the SmackDown that aired on April the 12th. It was taped on the 9th in Boston, Massachusetts. This was the night after the rowdy Raw crowd, of course, the night after WrestleMania. I wrote a blog this week talking about the reason why that crowd was so unique and not to expect anything like, going forward like we saw there, with a possible exception of not this coming week, but the next week when they are in London, 2 weeks, the second Raw from now. London crowds can be rowdy, and they can kind of do anything at any time. So they're the wild card. Taking them out of the equation, though, I think this crowd in Boston was more what we will call the traditional WWE audience. Got a couple of emails from people who were there talking about how there were, there were kids in the attendance, and they loved different things that some of the adults didn't love. They loved Sheamus. They loved Randy Orton. We didn't get that Monday night, at least for a lengthy period of time. I mean, but we did hear the Fandango cheers, which we're now we now understand is being called Fandangoing. That's when you sing the Fandango theme. But it looks like other than the Fandango theme, we're back to business as usual for these WWE crowds.
Yeah, it certainly seems that way, and that's to be expected. I mean, your blog detailed why that crowd was unique, and I'm happy they got to send WWE their messages, I guess you could call them, about certain characters on the show. But I mean, we're not supposed to, we're not going to see that basically anywhere else. I mean, London might be somewhat similar, but I still don't think you're going to get nearly as many hardcore wrestling fans into one building as you see at that post-WrestleMania Raw. But it's it was definitely fun to watch, and this crowd definitely felt more traditional, and I'm sure that's what we'll expect going forward.
And they were given, I thought, a pretty lackluster show. I mean, it was kind of mediocre. Most of the matches that we had were 2-minute matches, just kind of get people on the show. It was just very blah, is what I thought we got. It got pretty good at the end with the main event with Jericho and Dolph Ziggler, and they were happy to see Ziggler as well when he first came out. And I thought he tried, I don't know how effective he was, but I thought he tried very hard to get the crowd to turn against him again. But, you know, this was not a great show by any stretch of the imagination, and I didn't feel like, other than one real feud building, or one real feud maybe kicking off with Sheamus and Mark Henry, I don't feel like there was a lot that happened on this show. I'm interested to hear your thoughts. I know we'll take it apart from start to finish, but normally we like to pull out the big stuff at the beginning. I don't know that there's much big stuff on this show to pull out.
Yeah, I get the feeling that we're kind of heading towards Extreme Rules at least at a snail's pace for this week. Maybe it was just hangover related to just how much effort is required to do a long WrestleMania show plus a 3-hour Raw plus plus an episode of SmackDown recorded the next day. Maybe there just wasn't that much attention span to be put into creative for this show, but it definitely did feel like. Things were just kind of crawling forward, and there were some pretty good segments. I mean, there were entertaining spots here and there, but you're absolutely right. There wasn't any major news to report from this show. Dolph Ziggler's first attempt to get the crowd to turn back on him after he got that amazing reaction on Monday was partly successful. I mean, he did a pretty good job of kind of establishing himself again as that whiny heel that he seems to play very well. But it definitely wasn't as strong of a reaction as he got on Monday, and that's probably an impossible bar to reach. But I think he and Jericho gave a good first effort in the main event, and I thought the opening promo of the show was pretty decent. I mean, it wasn't spectacular, but it wasn't very good material to look at either.
Dolph fighting a weakness in his voice in this show. He opened up the show with that promo that you talked about, and struggled with his voice. I don't know if he was sick or if he just, from screaming Monday night, because God knows he was hyped up all Monday night after winning the championship. I know that happened on Raw, but just I wanted to quickly get your thoughts about, because it does play so much into this show, what did you think about Dolph Ziggler's win on Monday? Were you as excited about it as the live crowd was? Because, say what you want about him, they loved Dolph Ziggler and loved his win.
Yeah, I mean, it would be hard to replicate that kind of emotion in your living room as I was watching it on television. But I was definitely pumped up for Ziggler's win. I was extremely tired of the Del Rio and Swagger feud. I thought it was going nowhere extremely quickly. And it was in need of some fresh blood. And I think Ziggler is the guy to offer that into that main event scene. And, the reaction to that crowd on Monday must have been extremely special for him. I think, at various points in there, post-match celebration on Monday, you could see AJ and Dolph and even Big E kind of shedding a tear as to how emotional they were getting over that moment. So that was a really cool Raw memory that I'm sure he'll have forever. And I'm excited for what he can offer to the World Heavyweight Championship. I mean, you and I have both predicted his cashing into that briefcase more times than we probably care to admit. But it was definitely a very good moment on Monday.
Yeah, that's apparently my gimmick, to keep picking it over and over and over again and then talk junk when you finally get it right. That's how it became with the briefcase, Triple H's return, the pay-per-view, whatever. There's probably a full list of them. But yeah, I thought it was a really good win for him. I was excited for him and happy to see him finally be able to cash it in and in front of a great crowd. And John Cena, I thought, closing out the show that night, if you haven't seen the video, it is up on the site. But John Cena closing out, talking about, thanking the crowd for making it a special night for Dolph Ziggler. I think that was legit, and certainly for Ziggler it was a legit moment. It was very cool. But let's talk about the show then, now that we kind of got the background there out of the way. We did open with, I was watching on delay, and the very first part of the show was cut off for me in the, the replay. They showed the replay of Ziggler winning that championship, but when I got it, we got Big E Langston, who was introduced by Lillian Garcia. He stepped down to the stage and introduced Dolph Ziggler, the new world champion, but he did it very much like Ricardo Rodriguez, holding on to the O and Dolph for some time. I thought it was a nice shout out to Ricardo, considering that, you know, Del Rio was the guy that was beat. That was cool, I really thought. Plus, we don't get to hear much from Langston on the mic. Dolph came to the ring at that point with everybody. Again, his voice was very weak, not sure why, but he said that he was the most gifted athlete in the industry, and everybody knew that. He said that he heard the crowd at WrestleMania chant his name in a match he wasn't even in, talking about the World Championship match there at WrestleMania. And then he said Monday night the crowd went absolutely insane for his win. He said everybody wanted to be a part of the celebration, but that was not the case. He didn't do it for them. He did it in spite of them. He was trying to get the crowd to turn against him. I don't know how well it was working. It was very obvious that several times throughout the show tonight that they had laid a boo track in over top of these guys. I felt like it was the case here. I certainly felt like it was the case later with Fandango. So I don't know exactly what the crowd reaction was here, but they may have been booing him some, but you could see the crowd and see they were not as loud as the sound was made out to be. No question they were piping in boos for this one. Jack Swagger's music hit, and he cuts him off. Zeb Coulter comes to the ring with him. They stand out on the ramp, but down near the wood ring, Zeb said, we've never been formally introduced. I am Zeb Coulter, and I wanted to congratulate you on your win. I also wanted to thank you for being born in Cleveland and being from Hollywood, Florida, and being a real American. He said, but all of that aside, everybody knows who made it possible for Ziggler to win the championship, and that was Jack Swagger. Ziggler said that this was their allotted time. It was his celebration. Swagger had his chance in WrestleMania, and so now he just needed to move to the back of the line. That got Swagger angry, and he climbed the stairs like he was going to get in the ring. Langston came around and stood side by side with Ziggler. Swagger kind of weighed his chances with the two guys, realized he didn't have much, so he backed back down. Coulter said that Ziggler should show his gratitude to Swagger by giving him a title shot, but nevertheless, Swagger was going to get what he wanted, and he was not going to wait long to get it. They left with their music playing, and Ziggler screamed for the music, as much as he could screamed for the music to be cut off. He started to talk again, but Del Rio's music hit and cut him off. He limped out on the stage wearing street clothes. Ziggler asked if he was out there to whine and cry or to ask for his rematch. He goes, if you want your rematch, then go ahead and come on down here right now. Del Rio told him to relax. He said he was there to congratulate him. He also knew what it was like to cash in the Money in the Bank contract and how great that feels. But as soon as his leg heals, he's going to get his rematch, and he's going to win his title back, and Ziggler would be the one left crying. His music played, and he left, and Ziggler got mad again and said, turn the music off, stop it. He said the next person that stepped through that curtain would find out exactly why he was the world champion. He waited for, 4 or 5 seconds. When nothing happened, he goes, I didn't think so. He started his next sentence, and immediately he's cut off by Chris Jericho's music. Jericho got an insane reaction from the Boston crowd. They were very happy to see him. He came out and did the shut the hell up line, which everybody loved. He said, he was happy that Ziggler won the championship, and he had every right to celebrate, but he was out there babbling on and on about his crazy girlfriend, and then he got the crowd chanting AJ's crazy, which AJ, of course, didn't like. Jericho said that the Y2J is the original show-off, and he had just come from Booker T's office, and he had some news for him and for everybody in the audience. Ziggler's first match as world champion would be against Chris Jericho later that night in the main event, and he walked off backstage with his music playing, leaving the heels in the ring being frustrated. I like this. I like the way they set it up. SmackDown often runs like a house show where you have the main event comes out at the very beginning and cuts a promo to set up the main event, and that's what they did here. But they took a little bit of a circuitous route to get there and showed us everybody that's kind of involved, whether it's Swagger, whether it's Del Rio. And I liked how they got there on this. I thought Jericho was good. The crowd really liked him. And as I wrote in my report, I can think of much worse guys I would want to go out there with in my first chance to show why I'm the world champion than Chris Jericho. Wouldn't you agree?
Yeah, absolutely. Jericho is, he's been sharp. I mean, he looks good even for a guy, a lot younger than him. I mean, he just looks like he's in some of the best shape of his life, and he's looked good in the ring since he's returned. So I couldn't think of anybody better to allow, Ziggler to kind of set the pace of the match and keep up with him. So I thought it was a good choice for the first match as champion, and I thought the promos were You know, they were pretty good as well. I mean, Swagger was okay, Del Rio was okay, but I thought, you know, once Jericho got out there and the crowd really reacted to what he had to say, I thought they did a decent job of setting up the main event, and they kind of left the crowd in suspense as to, you know, what Ziggler actually wanted to say, and they can always come back to that, you know, Monday or next week on SmackDown or whatever it is. They actually allow him to get a longer promo in, because it seemed like this segment here was just setting up this frustration of being unable to get out what he really wanted to say.
Yeah, I thought they did a good job of covering the fact that he was, you know, that he had a weak voice, too. I mean, he went out there, he said some things, they didn't completely silence him, but they built up enough stuff with other people coming out and cutting him off. I thought they were able to protect his voice and not have him be completely hoarse by the time he was done. I thought it was set up very well, and it made me want to see the main event, and then from there it was kind of all downhill for the show. It was we had Team Hell No backstage, and then we got back from commercial, the primetime players are in the ring, and first match of the night, Team Hell No defeats them in a minute and 38 seconds. They just, you know, slam everybody down, and Daniel Bryan slaps them with no lock. Darren Young taps out, minute 38 seconds. You know, it is what it is, and that was the standard for matches until the main event this week. But from there, the match was there just to get them out into the arena so they could have what happened next. The Shield appears on the screen. They cut. Dean Ambrose did 90% of the talking in this promo. He said that they should not confuse them backing away Monday night when they were facing down Hell No and Undertaker. They shouldn't take that as a show of weakness or that they were running away. Ambrose said you have to be smart to survive in this world, and if anything, they were smart. Roman Reigns said that the Shield never retreats. Rollins said, you can believe that, and you will believe in the Shield. Kane popped his pyro when they celebrated with the fans to close the segment. But I like these promos from the Shield. I've liked them for a long time. I like this one a little bit more than what we've gotten recently, because at least they have a direction now. It seems like they're going to go after those tag team championships. And I assume we'll get some sort of a Freebird rule for them once they end up capturing those. Or as I joked in my report, a demolition rule for those of the culturally unwashed. But, I like this. I still wish we had a better understanding of their motivation and why they're together as a group and whatnot. I don't think we're going to get it. But at least this, you know, they're going after a specific team now. I'm sure that's going to morph into a tag title challenge for them. So at least there's some motivation now instead of just randomly attacking people, which I like.
Yeah, I think the promo was fairly well done. I'm with you in the respect that I think the Shield needs some sort of foundational explanation. I mean, it seems like they do a very good job of cutting those promos at the moment, but I still don't understand where they're coming from. I mean, we had that, you know, the Justice kind of foundation for a while, but it seems like they've drifted away from that. I mean, it's hard to find you know, Justice and anything they do anymore, and they don't generally mention it much in the promos. So we need something of an explanation from them, hopefully, in the near future. Maybe when they actually do capture the tag belt, they'll go on to explain something else. But it seems like they're kind of adrift and they're going after Hell No, but we really don't know why. And I'm sure it'll be explained eventually, but it does seem like we're lacking something in this moment.
Yeah, I make me understand a little bit more. I don't need much. You know, just explain to me why you three guys are together. Explain to me what the whole Justice thing meant. You know, I understand the desire to win a championship. So, as this morphs into we're going after the tag team championships, that makes sense to me. What doesn't make sense to me is what they've done up to this point. So they haven't been given a reason. And I think we agree that that's really all we want is just give me something, even if it's quick, even if it's simple. Okay, that's fine. Now we can move on. I want to know more about these guys, and I think that's true of just about every character, though, in WWE. Their biggest problem continues to be characters that are not fleshed out, characters that are not rounded out. They're flat and lifeless, and that's all we get, some of the weak feuds that we get. After commercial, we got some pictures of WrestleMania, primarily Undertaker's match. That was the one that seemed to be focused on the most. Tino Morello was in the ring. Wade Barrett makes his entrance, and then we get the video of him winning the Intercontinental Championship back just 24 hours after losing it. And the one move that I really just go, what in the blue hell were they thinking for that? But our second match of the night, Wade Barrett defeats Santino Morella at 2 minutes and 24 seconds. You've got a weak champion with a weak character, so let's put him in a ring with a guy who's going to continue to wrestle comedy even while he's beating on him. Santino Marella trying twice to nip up and failing to do so, landing on his head, Barrett beating him up all those times, and then finally at the end, on the third attempt, he does hit the nip up, goes on his big offensive string, sets up for the Cobra, but thank God Barrett hits the big boot and the bull hammer elbow for the win. Whatever, Santino's fine. I've talked about this many times before, that, you know, I believe there's a place on the card for comedy, but, I mean, you just took the title off this guy to put it right back on him. He's so diminished, the title's so diminished. Obviously, this is the first step towards rebuilding him, but why Santino? Why has Santino go out there and goof it up with a guy whose character is a legit badass? I mean, he's a bare-knuckles brawler. He's a bare-knuckles champion. His finishing move is an elbow to the face. Why do you put him in there with a Santino Marella character and let Santino goof it up? I just don't get it, Jake.
Yeah, I really don't have any answers for you. I'm kind of in the same boat. I like Barrett. I think, you know, they do need to kind of reboot him at this point as the Intercontinental Champion if they really want to try to increase the the prestige of that title on television. I mean, we didn't even really see much of the U.S. title at all in the build towards WrestleMania, and the Intercontinental title ended up being an afterthought on the pre-show. So, I mean, these belts are definitely falling off the radar of people who are just casually paying attention to the show. I mean, they almost seem meaningless at this point. I don't think it helps to send him out there as the Intercontinental Champion and send a comedy act out there to pretend it's a legitimate threat. I mean, it doesn't help, and I hope they get their act together with these belts. Because, you know, just putting that title on somebody and having them, be a jobber to the stars, as people who are contending for the main event, certainly isn't, you know, increasing the reputation for that. And they both have, both those titles have rich history, and it doesn't seem like they're really taking advantage of it. It's kind of a shame.
Yeah, the thing that's most confusing is that, okay, I understand you're trying to build him back up, go out there and squash him. That's fine. I disagree with the way WWE does that, but that's neither here nor there. It's like, why Santino? Aren't there other guys you could have beat up that would have bumped around and looked more impressive? But kudos out of this match. Kudos to JBL when Wade Barrett hit the bullhammer. Santino still had the Cobra sock on, and somebody said that he knocked out the sock too. JBL yelled, "Call PETA." So that was my one funny moment of the night with the announce team. From there, we went backstage, we'll just talk about what happened, and then we'll break this down into two different things, because there's two things of note in this promo or in this segment. Booker T and Teddy Long are backstage. Booker T is obviously talking about how nice it was to be at the Hall of Fame. Sheamus walks up and starts complaining about what happened on Monday, how Booker, you know, took his match with Big Show away. And then, you know, he ended up in a match with Orton. He wanted to know what that was all about. Booker was trying to sneak a word in edgewise. Orton shows up at that point. He starts complaining about the same thing. How dare you put us in a match together? What was going on there? And before Booker could say anything, Teddy Long jumps in and says, "Okay, Orton, I'm going to be straight up with you. It was Booker's idea. I thought it was a bad idea, but, you know, we all make mistakes. I just want to make sure you're not coming at me when you're upset." It was so bizarre. It was so forced. It was so just poorly done there, the way they snuck that in. Orton said whatever. He wanted to know how Booker was going to make it right, and at that point Booker said that he was going to give both guys what they wanted, their hands on the Big Show, by booking a handicap match of Orton and Sheamus versus Big Show for later on. They liked that. They walked off. Booker turns around to get in Teddy's face, and Teddy just no-sells him. We can talk about the match being booked or whatever and whatnot, and I still think they're going towards ultimately Sheamus versus Orton somewhere. It felt like it got a little derailed here tonight because they were on the same page, and then what happened with Mark Henry later, but I still feel like they feel there's a money matchup there. We may see that ultimately for SummerSlam. But what the hell is going on with Booker T and Teddy Long? Why is this a story, and why is Teddy suddenly healing it up?
Yeah, I'm not entirely sure either. The whole thing with him coming clean, I guess you could say, to Orton, it was forced and bizarre. I'm wondering if they're even going to push him towards being a manager again or something. You know, a heel manager managing heel talent, or taking over some kind of role, you know, with that, and then trying to get his general manager job back through, you know, challenging Booker T to something. I'm getting the feeling that we're going to see one of those awful, you know, general manager conflict battles over the summer, and I'm just not looking forward to it. But again, with the, you know, I don't know. I'm not interested in Orton and Sheamus anymore. I'm kind of on the same page as that crowd on Monday. I just don't understand, you know, what their characters are doing anymore, and they don't really fit in with, you know, with anything else. But you know, with yawning, in my opinion, I can't get past the Lucky Charms and the stale Orton promos anymore. So, you know, what they're doing is rapidly fading from interest for me. But I'm equally as bored with the general manager battle. So this segment was just kind of a flunky thing for me. I had no interest in it.
Yeah, I had some interest when I thought it was going to be Orton turning heel, because I thought he versus Sheamus could be a pretty good. I thought if anybody could get Sheamus away from that Lucky Charms character, it would be Randy Orton because of how he acts as a heel. So I was looking forward to that possibility, but now it doesn't seem they're going that way. It looks like it's going to be Orton and Big Show, I guess, going forward, and Sheamus and Mark Henry. We'll talk about that in a second. But the stuff with Booker T and Teddy Long has been going on for a couple of weeks now. This was the most overt that it's been, and they revisited a little bit later for just a second, and Teddy Long is even more of a douchebag. I just don't get it. Like, they spent so much time making Teddy Long this sympathetic babyface character with Oksana and all the different things that they've done, and now they're going to, I guess, turn him heel. But you know, he was the good guy in the feud with Eve Torres when she was there, when they were, you know, like two sides for Booker T. He ends up playing the good guy, but now he's turning. It's just so weird. It's so weirdly timed. But more than anything else, why do we care? Why is there any time given to Teddy Long and Booker T that's not wrestling? I don't get it. I don't understand. And not in a way that sets up wrestling either, at least not as of yet. Just these two bickering and Booker T not being able. It's like Teddy Long's oblivious to what's going on, or that's how he's selling it. And it's just so dumb. I don't get it. But we got the Bella Twins and Tamina making their entrance. Before the break, after the break, the Funkadactyls and Caitlin danced out as well, and that led to our third match tonight. Tamina and the Bella Twins defeating the Funkadactyls and Caitlin at 1 minute and 29 seconds. Caitlin, of course, looked like a total badass. She's spearing everybody in the ring. Then Naomi tagged in, and Cole made an ass joke about her, and then that led to the match kind of broke down from there with bodies all over the place, and one of the Bellas ended up pinning, I think it was Naomi. I don't know where they're going with this. I guess we're still going to get the Bella Twins and Funkadactyl feud. And I guess Tamina is who's going to face Caitlin at this point. I don't know. The Divas division is so weak. I don't know how much time to spend on this. But were you kind of surprised at Michael Cole's ass joke?
Well, I mean, they had that, you know, the parody with the Bellas and Team Rhodes Scholars dancing out on the SmackDown before WrestleMania, where the Bellas were, like, they had padding stuffed into their pants, so they were kind of doing ass jokes last week, too. So I guess I'm not terribly surprised, but I was surprised to see it recognized so clearly by the commentators, as if it's, like, the official bit now. But I guess we'll see where it goes. Like you said, it's so weak that, it's hard to consider it any more than just a passing, you know, quick joke. But I don't know where they're going with Tamina and Caitlin. I thought they already did that before. And it didn't seem like it went anywhere. So I don't know. I think the Divas division is floundering without a new influx of talent. And hopefully they can, you know, it seems like they have enough talented people in NXT that they could bring people in. But I don't know what's holding them back at this point.
Yeah, I don't know. There's talent in NXT. They need to move up, or they need to do something with the talent they have. And when you've got Natalya basically being, she'll do some backstage interview stuff, and then when she is seen on screen, she's with the Great Khali. When you got people just sidelined like that, you're not going to have, in a division that doesn't have a lot of people in it anyway, it's going to be a weak division. It's going to continue to be a weak division. That's a shame. They just inducted into the Hall of Fame one of the best female performers of the, maybe arguably the best female performer of the modern era. And, you know, on the tail of that, this is what we get. Just a shame. From there, after commercial, we got more WrestleMania stills, and then Triple H, made his entrance to the ring. As I put, he got a great response from the crowd, and probably much nicer than he would have gotten Monday night. And no frostbite on his belly this time. I know Jason was laughing about it. I actually missed it on WrestleMania. I don't know why I was distracted from, but I didn't really see him until he was already up on the apron getting ready to do the water spit thing, so I wasn't entirely sure what they were talking about. I went back and watched it, and as soon as I saw what it was, I felt bad for the guy, and then we get the reports coming out that he had second-degree burns from that. When I saw it, I realized what happened. He was wet and walked through that dry ice fog, and the ice froze to him. It froze that water that was on his belly, and he's a tough cat for having to deal with it. I'm sure that stung like hell, but at any rate, he was in good shape this time. He did have a soft cast on that left arm, but didn't seem to be hindering him too much at all. He got out about two lines. He says the ass kicker was back. He told Lesnar they were going to go to war, and that's exactly what they did. Before he could say more, he was cut off by 3MB. Heath Slater told him to shut up and listen up. To me, the funniest part of this was Triple H looking kind of surprised and being like, oh, really? And Heath was like, yeah, that felt good. You shut up. And I was like, I wonder, A, how much of that is a shoot, and B, if Triple H is like, wait, shut up wasn't in the line, jerk off. You know, I don't know. My conspiracy theory part of my mind, those two brain cells ran off and had a little fun with that line. But at any rate, I'm not saying anything happened. It was just a fun thought. But anyway, Triple H, 3MB came down, surrounded the ring. They said that apparently you had to jump a big dog to get noticed about around there, and that he was the biggest dog there. So they surrounded the ring. They climbed up on the apron, and at that point, Shield music hit. Shield comes down through the crowd. They surround the ring on the same side as 3MB, but they yank 3MB off the apron, beat them down. Then they jump on the apron, obviously getting 3MB back for stealing their gimmick. I thought that was kind of cute. Then they surround the ring. They're just about to get in the ring with Triple H when, of course, King's Pyro pops again. Not as impressive as Monday night when it popped and scared the crap out of me, but still, a good moment. Kane and Daniel Bryan run out. The Shield stare at him for a minute, and then they beat a hasty retreat. And then perhaps the best news of all of this is that we didn't get to see the garbage that was taped afterwards. We had what happened on the website. There was a bunch of hugging stuff going on afterwards and whatnot that was silly. Fortunately, none of that made the TV. But I guess the big thing for me that came out of this, Jake, was we saw this. It's basically a mirror of what happened Monday night with Undertaker, and everybody assumed then that Undertaker would be in a triple threat match. So my question to you is that does this mean that we're not going to get the triple threat match with Undertaker, or does this mean that we're also going, not triple threat, but a six-man, are we not going to get the six-man match with Undertaker, or does this mean that we are going to get that match and a six-man match with Hunter as well?
Yeah, I'm not really sure. You know, it's hard to say because I know the Undertaker is supposed to be on the European tour, at least for a couple of dates. And obviously Triple H will be there as well. So it's hard to say. I was thinking, you know, man, that'd be a great pay-per-view match on Monday if they're able to get The Undertaker back for another pay-per-view, against The Shield, and what a huge moment that would be, you know, for them if they were able to pick up a win even over, even if they pinned one of the Team Hell No members, just the associates with beating a team with The Undertaker on it. But, I mean, I wouldn't mind either way. What I'm thinking is that we're just going to get some kind of TV match for that Raw in London, but I'm not entirely sure at this point. It does seem like they're just focusing on putting Hell No and The Shield, kind of apart from each other, opposite each other, and that third member might not, you know, necessarily be a good portal.
Yeah, I felt pretty good Monday night that we were going to get that six-man match, and we talked about it in .NET Weekly and whatnot, and then after seeing this, it's like, oh. Well, maybe we won't get that match. Maybe it was just Undertaker that they used at that time, and they did the same thing with Triple H. I think this bodes well that we'll see both guys again because neither one of them were really able to finish their promo. We talked about how the one on Monday was not Undertaker goodbye. We'll see. I'll see you guys next year. We didn't get that from Hunter here either. Maybe that's by design. Maybe they're just going to let these guys drift off as opposed to cutting promos that kind of tie things up in a bow and make it clear that they're not going forward from here. So maybe that was the intent, and we've seen either one of these guys, and it ends up just being a tag title challenge or chase for the Shield ultimately. But we'll see how it plays out. Undertaker is supposed to be at the shows in London, like you said, so that'll be our first chance to get there or to see if they're going to do something. Well, I presume our first chance if they're going to do something. They may do something with Triple H next week when Raw is still in the States, but we'll wait and see. But I thought it was a pretty good moment for the fans. But I have to see the Shield come down and the Shield backed off again. They got to be careful with that. They can sell that like they did with in their promo earlier in the show with that doesn't mean that we're running away. They get away with that as heels, but only for a little amount of time, and then they become the worming heels. God knows WWE loves to book heels that way, so they need to be careful there. The last thing you need is for that group to become a wormy group because all the mystique and all the goodwill around them, around their characters, is going to collapse if that's where they go. From there, we go backstage. Booker T is about to chastise Teddy Long for what happened. Teddy's like, I don't understand where the anger is coming from, Booker. It's like, really? Now that Teddy Long is also a moron in addition to being a jerk. But Big Show storms up at that point. That allows Teddy to say he's out. He storms out. Big Show starts complaining to Booker about the handicap match. He wanted to know why Booker made it. Booker said because you stuck your nose in the business on Monday night where it didn't belong, referring to coming out at the end of the Orton and Sheamus match and breaking up that match. He should have said maybe he should just go home since he had an ironclad contract. Booker said that was fine if he wanted to do that, but he would make sure that contract was held up in court until it was rusted and worthless. He said, if you want to stay around, you can, but your match is next. And Show stormed off, essentially, for that match. Anything you want to add here? I mean, it was just the natural kind of... I appreciate they came back to this to get Big Show's reaction to the handicap match, but other than that, it was just kind of, that's what I expected.
Yeah, pretty much. I thought the reference to his contract holding up in court was kind of bizarre. But other than that, yeah, it was a pretty standard follow-up to what we saw earlier.
That's always the problem when guys talk about their contracts. Taz is doing the same thing in TNA right now. And that's supposed to keep him from getting physical because he's not physically able to do so. But you know, things like this are like, okay, he's got the ironclad contract. A, how long is it for? Because, you know, you got to find a way to get around it. And B, if you've not established how long it's for, then you got to find a way to get around it to keep guys from using it constantly. And it's like, why all of a sudden now are we going to be able to hold it up in court? Why couldn't we do that last month or 6 months ago or whatever? That's always the problem with kind of building that prop into your storylines is that you have to find a way to make heels do what they don't want to do when they have one of those ironclad contracts. This was kind of, but it's what they went with. After commercial, we got entrances for everybody. Randy Orton came to the ring with his ribs taped up. And that led to our fourth match of the night. Randy Orton and Sheamus defeating Big Show by countout at 4 minutes and 2 seconds. Big Show pretty much so in control this entire match, slapping people around, tossing guys around. Sheamus got a hot tag, but he took a spear to kind of stop that. And then Randy Orton hits an RKO out of nowhere. That allows Sheamus to recover and hits a throat kick. That knocks Big Show from the ring. Show decides he has enough and walks up the ramp to get the countout victory. Kind of anticlimactic, wasn't it, to take him? I mean, they got to hit him with their finishers, but he just walked away, and I don't know. I mean, I realize they're coming back to this on some level in some way with these guys, but I was kind of unimpressed.
Yeah, that was kind of my reaction, too. We didn't see anything out of the ordinary here. It just kind of played out like you would expect a TV match, handicap match to play out with the heel just getting tired of taking abuse and just leaving. You know, we've seen Show and both of these guys in the ring so much together that, you know, when they do hit finishers and whatnot, it just kind of loses a lot of its impact. So that part of it wasn't even necessarily impressive anymore. You know, I just want these guys to move on to something more interesting. I just don't see, you know, anything that these three could put together really holding my interest. I mean, I can see where if they try to, you know, move the characters forward with Orton and Big Show that they could, you know, they could try to get something interesting out of that, but I don't know. It just seems to me like they've kind of played out anything interesting here. And then Show leaving was about as anticlimactic as they could make this. But I guess it fit where they were going with the narrative.
Yeah, and then it gets kind of weird after that too. Like I said, if they bring it up after commercial break, Orton and Sheamus are backstage walking. As I called her the new interview girl, and I'm learning her name. I'm terrible with names, folks, but Renee Young is who she is. Thank you to all the people on Twitter who called me a douchebag for not knowing her name. I didn't know she was going to be a permanent part of the show again or you know, going forward. I will have her name down soon, I hope. But Renee Young, trainer's room and he would see Sheamus there, but Sheamus agreed to stay and talk. She asked him, she pointed out, she goes, you guys got your hand on Big Show, but it was a count-out victory. Does that count? And he said, you know, revenge is sweet, and it doesn't matter how big or strong you are. All that matters is this, and he pounded on his heart. And that's when Mark Henry attacked him from behind and knocked him into a table of food or some sort of stuff. And Sheamus, you know, was down on the ground. Mark Henry started his yelling promo, yelling at him, so it doesn't matter, huh? It doesn't matter how big you are. The ref came out and chased him away, and Sheamus laid on the ground and sold the attack. First of all, my apologies, my correction. They did not wrestle for the World Championship. It was Henry who won it right after their feud that they had in summer of 2011. But it still feels stale to me, even if it, I mean, it's been, what, 18 months or so since they wrestled, maybe a little bit longer than that. It still feels stale because it's just more of the same. It's just these same four or five guys on SmackDown being plugged in at the different spots, Orton, Sheamus, Big Show, Mark Henry, just kind of moving everybody around, shuffling the same deck. And so it still feels stale to me, but I apologize. They did not wrestle for the championship. That's why I generally don't make those statements, because my memory doesn't hold up like that. But notwithstanding, Jake, do you like the idea of Henry and Sheamus going forward? Do you like the way they set it up from here going forward? What did you think about this? For me, the big thing was is they get the cheap win, and then they ask him about the cheap win, and Sheamus, you know, no-sells it, just blows it off like, it doesn't matter. I got to kick him in the face. That's all that matters, and heart is all that matters. It doesn't matter how big and strong you are. It was just weird to me.
Yeah, I don't really get the Sheamus character anymore. I mean, he's either Lucky Charms or empty platitudes as far as his promos go, and I just don't buy it. I don't get the sense that his character is a real human being. He just feels like a caricature of a guy that they have him play on television, and it's just weak to me. I don't understand where they're going with him. I think he's a fantastic wrestler. I just don't get his character. And Henry, while I really do like his character, and I think it fits his personality and who he is, you know, just being a monster and they kind of amp that up for television. It seems like a natural fit for him, but I'm kind of in the same boat as you as far as, you know, putting them back together again. I think we've seen Sheamus feud with the Big Show, over the past, months, seeing Sheamus opposite another big man, in kind of a similar role where, you know, Big Show was playing that monster heel, who captured the title from him and he was playing against the odds there. I mean, it seems like we're going to get a repeat of that situation here where you're just kind of swapping out, Henry for Show and they're not going to do much with Sheamus' character, at least is what it seems to me. And I don't know. I just don't feel compelled to tune into that. It just seems like a repeat of something we've seen before.
Yeah, it just feels like the same old thing. So kind of upsetting that that's what we're getting, but maybe we'll see. And I'm also a little confused by, you know, Henry not going back and wanting to get his hands on Ryback after what happened on Monday. I don't understand why they're going to move away from that pretty quick, but we'll see how it goes. Maybe they're not. Maybe they've got Henry pulling double duty, and he'll be feuding with Sheamus on SmackDown and feuding with Ryback on Raw. Because I do think they end up in a triple threat match to put off Ryback versus John Cena. I do think we're ultimately going that way. But I felt pretty confident after Monday that we were going to get a triple threat initially to put that off a little while. But who knows now after that? I mean, we got a mess of guys right now, so we'll see what happens on Monday for sure. From there, we get Kofi Kingston and Antonio Cesaro already in the ring. Cole was talking about, you know, what was going on in the back as they first started, but I'm kind of surprised that both guys, didn't either one guy got an entrance there. And that led to our fifth match, Kofi Kingston surprisingly defeating Antonio Cesaro with 3:07. Josh Matthews going, oh, well, this certainly means that Kofi Kingston's put himself in line for a U.S. title shot. Boy, I'm so excited. I don't even know what to say about this, Jake. Another U.S. title shot for Kofi Kingston. I am almost to the point. I like Kofi Kingston, and I don't want to see him, you know, not make great money, but I'm almost to the point of saying just because from a creative standpoint I want to see more from him, I wish WWE would either push him and let him do something or just cut him and let him go do something else.
Yeah, it is kind of getting to that point. I mean, I guess
the colloquialism is, you know, shit or get off the pot. I mean, and I think, you know, that's kind of where they are with Kofi. It seems like they've kind of pushed him right up to that threshold where you think, oh, man, he's just going to explode onto the main event scene. And that's, you know, it's been right up to that threshold a couple of times, and then they just kind of yank him right back again. And, you know, I kind of mentioned earlier how worthless these middle, you know, these mid-card titles are, the U.S. and the Intercontinental title. I mean, they carry no weight with the television audience. You know, they, I mean, it is just something he can wear around his waist if he captures the belt, but, man, you have to wonder, you know, what exactly they plan on doing with him with that belt. I mean, it can't be, you know, that they're going to have him and Barrett, you know, restore prestige to these titles. I mean, if anything, he's just going to do what everybody else who's carried these titles do, and that's, you know, have relatively good matches on television, and then job out in non-title matches to main event talents who are kind of working their way through a story. And I don't know. I just see Kofi being interesting in that role again. It just doesn't work for me. I want to see something more from him. If nothing else, you know, like you said, just if you're not interested in pushing him, just cut him and let him, you know, let him thrive somewhere else.
Yeah, I mean, obviously he wouldn't make the money anywhere else, and so like I like Kofi, and I, you know, it's kind of the reverse to the question I get all the time, because I cover so much of the indies, and people ask me, you know, hey, who's the indie guy who you want to see in WWE? And my answer is always prefaced by, I will give you the guys I think deserve the payday, and that's where kind of Kofi Kingston sits here. He's a guy who deserves the payday. He's a guy who deserves WWE level exposure. But just, I want to see something from the guy. I think he's got real potential. I think he's been derailed a couple of times. I find it absolutely hilarious that at least one of those times was derailed by Randy Orton for making a mistake when Orton looked like a complete dumbass on Monday for getting his line. I want to see something more from Kofi Kingston than what we got here. And a feud with Antonio Cesaro is not going to do it. And before we move on, why the hell do they still have him yodeling in the ring?
Yeah, we commented on that a couple of weeks ago. I mean, it's just so weird. I mean, it doesn't even fit with the gimmick. It's just random, you know, hey, he's from Switzerland. Let's have him yodel like an idiot. And that's really as much thought as it appears went into it. I don't get it either. It's beyond insulting.
The announcers were even mocking it.
Yeah, that's what I mean. It's just like, where, you know, where is that going? I mean, he's so talented as a wrestler, you know, his character up till this point hadn't been that bad. It's just, I don't know. It seemed like he was a couple of tweaks away from moving up to the main event himself, and now it seems like they're investing in permanently making sure that never happens.
Yeah, I mean, the announcers were making fun of him. I think it was JBL talking about cold yodeling or whatever. It was just like, what in the hell are you doing? It's just dumb. From there, after commercial break, we got the video recapping what happened on Raw, the Raw SmackDown, Raw Rebound with Cena and Ryback and Mark Henry. At that point, when they came back, Cole said they were hoping for an explanation from Ryback on Monday. But he didn't, you know, when they went off the air Monday, he was doing the whole why Ryback, why gimmick. You know, oh, God, why did you do that, Ryback? And this time it was more, we hope to hear more from Ryback and understand why. Where do you think they're going with this? Do you think this was a heel turn, or is this just Ryback being a monster and this is what monsters do, heel or babyface?
Yeah, that's kind of what I thought. I wasn't sure what exactly to expect from Ryback post, you know, laying a beating John Cena. But I think we'll get more. And I hope it's just more of a case of him being a monster and not necessarily being a heel, because I don't think the crowd is really ready for that at this point.
Yeah, I agree. After that, we got Fandango made his entrance, and again, I felt like they were piping boos in here. You could hear the crowd kind of singing his theme underneath all of that, and you could hear it better once he got in the ring. But I'm just curious, usually it's hard for us to tell, it's usually a pretty good job, but I really felt like these boos were fake.
I certainly got the same impression. I really felt like they overlaid some boos a couple of times. Like you said in the opening segment with Ziggler, it seemed fairly obvious that's where they went. And Fandango was the same case here. I mean, you could even see, you know, crowds dancing for him, too, as he got closer to ringside, or crowd members dancing to his music. So I think they're going to have a hard time overcoming that whole Fandangoing movement on Twitter and expect him to stay a heel for very long, unless he really does something super dastardly on television that can turn a crowd against it.
Yeah, I think it'll settle down. They're obviously pushing the fandangoing thing, and if you haven't seen, the Dallas Cowboy cheerleaders are doing it now. There's a video of them out doing it. That's pretty mainstream, folks. That's kind of impressive. But on the same hand, they've got to keep him heel. I think they can. I hate to say pipe in those boos over top. Let this thing just play out. He's still a heel. He's still going to get booed for his actions. If he gets cheered for the next couple of weeks when his music initially hits, it'll be fine. They're working too hard on this. And the boos were so uniform, and it was the same exact sounding boos from the opening segment. You could tell. It seemed pretty fake. And usually they're really good about that. There are times we question it because of how the crowd looks or whatever. But this wasn't a questionable thing. This was, oh, God, no, they're piping in boos. But he didn't join the commentary team. He just stood at ringside with his partner. And then that led to our sixth and final match of the night, your main event, Dolph Ziggler defeating Chris Jericho in about 12 minutes. Watching this on delay, had to fast forward through the commercials, not the exact time, but it's about close, about 12 minutes or so. Really good match, you would expect to get from them. Fandango interfered one time, or kind of on the apron one time, and he took Chris Jericho's springboard drop kick that he does that knocked him back down to the floor. And that led to the whole finishing sequence. Ziggler went for the famouser again. Jericho blocked it, hooked the walls of Jericho. Fandango jumped on the apron again. That distracted the ref, which allowed Big E Langston to punch Jericho. And then Ziggler grabbed him off of that distraction and rolled him up for the pinfall victory. So a really good match, a fun, fast finish there. Jericho attacked Ziggler after the match because it was a roll-up victory. Langston ran in. Jericho was able to stop him for a moment. Fandango jumped up on the apron at that point. Jericho hit him again, but the numbers game got to him at that point. Ziggler hit zigzag from behind. Langston hit the big ending. They posed over Jericho and then left the ring. We'll stop there before we go to what happens next and just get your thoughts on the match and then the post-match beatdown from Langston and Ziggler. This is what they need. This is, for all my complaints about the wormy heels that WWE books, that is who Dolph Ziggler is. That is the character that he needs to play. That is the character that he's going to be able to be successful with. So even though I've complained about this same thing from other guys before, it's far different when Mark Henry acts this way than when Dolph Ziggler acts this way. You know, Mark Henry's a monster, should act like a monster. Dolph Ziggler's a wormy guy with a great big muscle guy with him. It's a lot like the Shawn Michaels and Diesel relationship from back in the day. So this is the character he needs to play, and so I'm really okay with this, and I like what they did here.
Yeah, I'm with you. I liked it. I thought, Jericho being a guy who had spent so much of his career being kind of the wormy heel probably was a good first outing for Ziggler, because I thought it fit with where they were going with him. Jericho knew exactly what to do in the ring in order to get the best out of that character, and I think it showed. I mean, they had a great match, and the interference all played into it very well. My personal belief is that, Ziggler is going to be a huge success as a champion if they can continue to work this formula, with a different variety of opponents. It's going to be tough to make it work if they're unable to at least design these matches to make both Ziggler and his opponent look good. I thought, Jericho is the kind of guy that can look good with anybody, but if they're going to try to do the wormy heel bit, with less successful wrestlers, they're going to need to work pretty hard to make sure the other guy looks great in the ring. And, if anybody can do it, it's Ziggler.
He needs some clean wins. Don't get me wrong. He can't get every win by it being some sort of wormy screw up thing. He needs some clean wins in there, but I think that you can get away with that more with him than you can, say, but most anybody else on the roster. I think this is the role that he's designed for. And again, because WWE loves to book this way, I think that they've got a big hit here with Ziggler going forward. After Ziggler and Langston leave, though, they got to stand tall and hold the title up over Jericho and whatnot and look good. Then Fandango gets in the ring. He dances a little bit while the crowd sings, stomps on Jericho a couple of times, hits the top rope, leg drop, has his partner come in the ring, bring in the microphone. He says his name while she does the split, and he poses with her above Jericho to close out the show. Same basic stuff from him. I'm pretty sure this means that we're not done with Chris Jericho yet, even though we don't have any future announced dates with him with the company. I think he's going to at least finish this feud with Fandango if he does go away for a while after that. But one thing that strikes me as funny is, well, let's just, before we get to that, let's just get your thoughts on the Fandango post-match attack. I mean, it's pretty simple and cut and dry, but I think this is what they need from him because he wasn't in the ring for so long. He was getting the You Can't Wrestle chance. It was a little bit sloppy at WrestleMania, but not bad. A pretty good match there. And I think he just, especially with him now, with Fandangoing becoming the thing, Fandangoing becoming the thing, he needs this. He needs to look a little bit like a badass at times to kind of counteract that. Does that make sense?
Yeah, no, exactly. I think it's just a matter of him needing to establish himself as a dominant threat to somebody. I mean, if it's not Jericho, then whoever else. I mean, he just needs to, to counteract that image that's kind of developing based on that crowd on Monday. I mean, like I said, I think it's going to be harder to shake than maybe WWE is anticipating, because I think, it becomes difficult to, like they saw on Monday, to counteract a crowd that wants to behave a certain way. And then, we've seen characters get turned before as a result of, crowds just not buying into what they're doing. But if they're able to, assert, Fandango as a heel like they are here, at least, counteract some of that. But it's going to be tough with that music, man. I guess it depends on how long that fad continues.
Yeah, I mean, we saw this last year with Daniel Bryan. He was the heel. They were doing the yes chant, and it ultimately led to a turn, but not in the traditional sense. They did the silly, anger management stuff, and that kind of made him a babyface because of it in the end. But he still argues with the crowd. He still doesn't want them to chant for him and whatnot. So, I mean, he's pretty much playing the same character. The crowd's just doing what they want to do with him, and it's worked, and I think WWE needs to embrace that. But I have to ask this question because I've noticed it a couple of times now, and it drives me crazy. Johnny Curtis climbs in the ring. He hits two or three kicks on Jericho. He jumps up on the top rope, does the top rope leg drop, and he's blown up. I realize he might be doing it for effect, but he's standing there breathing like he's just run a marathon. He did, like, four things, Jake. Why the hell is he breathing so heavy?
Yeah, that always catch me off guard, too. I mean, he looks like he's in incredible shape, so I'm not sure if it's just for effect or, if he's just doing that, just to kind of send home the creepiness of his character or what exactly, they're going for there. But if he is legitimately blown up, that is kind of bizarre. But he didn't seem like that at WrestleMania. So maybe it is just for effect and to, breathing heavy into a microphone kind of sends home that that kind of weirdness that kind of permeates that character.
Well, and that's fine. I understand that when he's saying, that's fine. But then afterwards, he's gasping for air. And I don't think he's blown up either. I'm just saying that's what it looks like, though. That's how hard he's breathing, like he's about to die. He's just gasping for air. And you did a top rope leg drop. I mean, I'm sure it hurts, but damn, does it make you? It's just so weird that he'll do one move and just huff and puff, even outside of speaking on the microphone. It's really strange, but that
I don't
was
think
the
it
closest
from
position.
That to be honest with you. Oops, sorry to interrupt you, but
no,
I hope they get away from that top rope leg drop eventually. I mean, that's going to shorten his career exponentially. That's dangerous.
Yeah, I mean, you look at the damage Hogan did, and all he did was a leg drop from a standing position. Randy's a heavier guy and all that sort of stuff, but you can't take too many of those bumps. I'm still surprised that John Cena does it as much as he does. I don't know. I'm very surprised that they continue to allow that. When you look at the other things they don't allow to keep guys from shortening their careers, to allow that top rope leg drop is just very bizarre to me. But that's what they're doing with him. That was the close of the show. That's all the time we've got this week. Jake, anything you want to add about the show before we get out of here?
No, like we said earlier, it was it was an average show, maybe even a little below average, because we really it was only the opening and closing segments that were that were really good. So I just hope we get better next week, and as WWE starts to really gear up for Extreme Rules.
Yeah, if you've got some time, a little bit of time, and you want to check out some of the high spots, I certainly agree the main event and the opening segment are where you want to go. Outside of that, I don't know if there's much else worth seeing. The Shield promo, while short, is pretty good. But if you've only got time to watch one thing, check out the main event. It was a fun match. But Jake and I will be back next week for another SmackDown audio review. Until then, all of the audio on the site is available to our members. Go sign up, be a .NET member. $7.50 will get you access to all of that audio. The Brian Fritz interview about the Hall of Fame, the Just Incredible interview, the Les Thatcher interview, Seth Mace, former WWE creative team member, joining Jason and I for a review of WrestleMania from Sunday night. All of that is available to you, plus all the stuff that's there before, interviews with Chris Jericho, Brock Lesnar. All of those audios are available all the time for our members, so sign up now, become a .NET member, check out the audio, listen to what we create each week, and check out the .NET member forum. If you have signed up, I know a lot of you took advantage last week of the dollar sign up, and we like to push the forum because it's a lot of fun in there. We're looking for more people to get involved because it's always a more, you know, the more the merrier situation. If you did sign up to be a member and you've not signed up to be a part of the forum, you do have to sign up a second time for the forum. There's no additional charge, obviously. You sign up in the forum, you can keep your same name that you did to sign up for the site. You can create a new one, whichever is fine with us. But do sign up to be a .NET forum member. Say hello to everyone there. We will try to make you feel welcome. There's a couple of schmucks in there that we I'm kidding. I'm joking. We love all our .NET members. We're happy they're in the forum. And we encourage you to join us as well. Jake and I will be back next week with another audio review. Until then, everyone, have a fantastic weekend. I know I will. It's my birthday.